wanted Rory to replace Brian Jones in the Stones.
Yeah.
And they went. Apparently there's recordings, but I've never heard them. Like, they went and he auditioned and they hung out and Rory turned him down. Because he didn't want to do anybody else's music. He wanted to keep doing Rory Gallagher. And that sort of hurt his career in some ways, because he would never sign with a label that wanted him, that wanted to tell him what to do. Mm. So he was never like the big, widely supported artist. He wasn't, you know.
I guess I respect that.
He
I feel like if the Stones ask you to play, you just go ahead and play.
Yeah. But, and he didn't record singles. He refused to record music that could be released as a single. He was only interested in doing albums that explored the blues.
So he didn't run out of money and reduced to writing elevator music? Or
no, he died relatively young because his liver was shot. Because he was an alcoholic.
Gee, I can't imagine how that could have happened. I bet his lungs were in great shape, too.
Yeah. But, yeah, always played. He had a battered Strat.
It's beautiful. I was just looking at it.
Dungarees and a flannel shirt. You know, no rock star accoutrements. No, you know, nothing. It was just him.
Can I tell you a story about a friend of mine who is not cool?
No.
He wants to be a rocker.
I said no.
He used to want to be a rocker. And so he bought this fancy new guitar, and he would never let anybody like touch the guitar, and he always had to polish the guitar, and he wasn't very good on the guitar. And then when he got some money, he bought another guitar, and then a third guitar. And all his concern was in this expensive, fancy, shiny new guitar, not actually playing the freaking guitar. And, you know, one day I felt like, I had to explain to this guy that if you're a guitarist, what's cool is you've got one guitar, and you just play the hell out of it until that damn thing is banged up and the frets are worn down and it's, you know, the fretboard just looks like the shape of your hand because you worked it so hard. And then it's your guitar. You own it, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the instrument. It knows the feel of your hands. You know how to get the sounds you want. That's how a guitarist is supposed to be.
Yeah, and that's how Rory Gallagher was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My friend is not cool.
No, he's not. I'm sorry. So that was Taste Live in 1970. At the same time... Yeah. Thin Lizzy was bubbling around.
The Lizzy.
We are going to hear a track from their first album. Now, people who only know Thin Lizzy for Jailbreak and The Boys Are Back in Town, they were a much different band for like their first, I'd say, easily 3 or 4 albums.
Okay.
And you'd think, oh, yeah, well, it was Whiskey in the Jar and it all sounded like that.
Yeah,
it didn't.
I'd say it that way, too.
They didn't particularly like playing Whiskey in the Jar. I think it was a song that like every Irish band had to play because the old people in the audience knew the song.
Rory Gallagher.
Phil Lynott, Lynott, apparently Phil how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Was bummed that Whiskey in a Jar became a big hit because it did not reflect the kind of music that he wanted to do.
Mm. It's funny.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
And it rocks, too.
It does rock. It's like a really cool arrangement of this traditional thing.
And the Metallica cover rocks even harder.
Yeah. So here is a not quite as rocking, but pretty interesting cut from Lizzy's first album called Thin Lizzy, which came out in 1971. Mm-hmm. And you definitely get a feel of the sort of Phil Lynott, you know, storytelling, man of the street kind of thing, because that's a big part of Thin Lizzy's music is Phil Lynott's storytelling in the lyrics. Yeah, he was the bassist, lead vocalist. So, as we will say many times tonight, Dig It and Dig It Deep, this is On Vinyl as God Intended.
Of 40s, when did Ella Vine live with Eunice King? He gave her the ring that she wore. Janice, the smiling daughter, who came from a marriage way before, But Eunice was the father that you always saw. Though they never, 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 never told her, she always knew the score. You see, kids were so much wiser after the wars. But then he hadn't had enough. She had to get some more. On a razor piece of paper, she wrote Eunice, I'm not sure. And with a child in her arms, she went looking for a fling. Besides, she didn't like the name Mrs. King. First time that she heard Dapper Dan was on the radio, crooning at the volume that was way, way down low. Did it was a surprise to hear that Dapper Dan was dead. Soon after he was a calling, and he asked the baby to plead it for a hand. Dapper's heart was dappered. When did he answer? No, 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 no. But if she changed her mind, she said, Dapper, I'll let you know. With a child in her arms, she went looking for a man. Besides, she didn't like the name Dapper Dan.
But Alistair got scared when he heard
and he joined the USA Marine. Inheritance, you see, runs through every family. Who is to say what is to be? Is any better? Over and over it goes. Goodness and badness, wind blows. I think I'll go on down the corner. We'll be right back.
Okay, so that was Thin Lizzy, Black Boys on the Corner. That was a single from 72.
Okay.
Pretty rockin'. And before that, we heard Diddy Levine. That is off of Thin Lizzy, the album. Both of those were on vinyl. How cool is that?
That's way cool.
Thank you.
Since you ask, it's awesome.
Thank you, thank
awesome,
you.
Awesome, cool. It's funny that they should come out of Ireland. They have quite a unique sound.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an Irishness to it, especially in something like Whiskey in the Jar, but it's definitely got its own rock and feel.
Mm-hmm.
Nor does it sound just like an imitation of British rock, which some of the earlier pieces we were playing tonight sounded a little bit like mm-hmm. that. I mean, Thin Lizzy is its own thing.
Yeah. The Lizzy.
The Liz. I was in Ireland. I was in Ireland, don't you know? Not too long ago. I was in Dublin, and there I was walking around a national art gallery there in Dublin, mm-hmm. and there they have a portrait of Bono.
Eek.
Yeah, it's kind of goofy looking, but...
I know Dublin has a statue of Phil Lynott, I know that. And I think Cork has a Rory Gallagher statue.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Somehow a painting of Bono, I mean, I know he's gazillionaire and world famous, but it just it looked kind of funny.
Well, I think he painted it himself and donated it.
Could have been it.
Hey, here's a painting of me.
I wonder what he's doing these days. He used to be into, like, I'm going to spearhead African debt relief.
Yeah.
And then that didn't happen, and you just stopped hearing about it.
Yeah, and also, isn't he, like, one of the rock stars that doesn't live in the UK because of the taxes and stuff?
Hey.
So he's, like, a big tax-dodging rock star.
And what's
star.
With those weirdo lavender plastic glasses that he wears everywhere?
Oh, I like those.
Guy's messed up.
Really, man.
Son of a gun.
Yeah. So that was Lizzy. And at that time, Thin Lizzy had a guitarist by the name of Eric Bell.
Eric Bell.
Eric Bell had played in them with Van Morrison.
Yeah, wow.
For part of 1966. Eric Bell replaced Gary Moore.
Gary Moore.
In Thin Lizzy. Gary Moore was the guitarist in Thin Lizzy. He left. Eric Bell came in. Then Eric Bell left. Gary Moore came in. Then Gary Moore left. Then they brought other people in. And then Gary Moore came back. And anyway, so...
It all comes around again.
It all comes around.
As my friend Mike Conway said once, it's not a very big island. So
no, you know, it is
the bands
not.
Bands are just going to... They're going to overlap at some point.
So in 1970, Gary Moore, not being with Thin Lizzy, had his own band called Skid Row.
Skid Row.
Now, one of the cool things about Skid Row is that if you remember in the 80s...
Isn't Skid Row a hair metal band?
Yes. And Gary Moore kept the rights to the name and licensed...
He licensed his name, man.
...the band's name to the rockers in the 80s.
How
and
funny.
Made a shitload of money off
yeah,
the
I
deal.
Bet.
Yeah,
really
isn't
did.
That awesome? Yeah.
It's like the early days of the web when somebody smart was buying up names like M&M.com.
Yeah, and I think it was M&M who actually did it.
And Hershey's.com, and then you just wait until somebody would come and say, no, yeah, I'll give it to you for $1 million. You want Hershey's.com? Give me $1 million.
Yep.
At the time, we were all like, what is this interwebs thing? I can't understand. It's too difficult. It's so weird. What is the future, future, future?
That's true. We were doing that, weren't we?
I remember, you want to know how old I am?
Yes.
I remember when email... was this challenging new thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's electronic mail. No. I thought, I'm never going to understand this, and then I would get all grumpy about it. Oh, I don't want to have to figure that all out. Oh, hell, I don't want to know. Just let somebody, I don't want to do all that email stuff.
Yeah?
I remember going to an old folks' home with my...
old folks?
With my wife, who was visiting her grandparents at the time, and I heard this extremely old guy saying, all the kids want these days is their internet. Well, that's what I'm going to leave them in my will, an internet.
Awesome. And that
yes?
is a perfect segue
okay.
to this cut. This is the first song off of Skid Row's first album. I believe it's their first album. Actually, I can confirm that right now. Yes, it is. This is their first album from 1970. The album was called Skid. And one of the songs sounded like this. Dig it and dig it deep.
Driving me home, having such a bad time, almost losing my mind, trying to shake off this crazy woman of mine. Losing my mind, trying to shake off this crazy woman of mine. I'm trying to shake off this crazy woman of mine. like a log, or you might come a fog on the night that the warm winds
All right, so that was Skid Row, Night of the Warm Witch.
Whoa.
That's from 1971. That is off of an album called 34 Hours.
I'm glad she was warm anyway.
Guess why the album was called 34 Hours.
Let me think. Because the person who wrote the song got his arms stuck between a cliffside and a rock, and he couldn't escape for 34 hours, and he had to cut his own arm off in order to run free.
No.
No, 34 hours. It's called 34 hours because it took 34 hours to record.
Yes, the entire album.
Entire album.
34 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was really good bass work, by the way.
Cool.
As a former bassist myself, I have to say, you don't often hear bass being that carefully appreciated.
No.
I don't know who the player was, but he's got a nice fretless, sounded like a Fender Jazz, and...
Well, I don't know. I could look it up if I were
It doesn't matter. I just want to say I was particularly appreciating that.
And then before Night of the Warm Witch, we heard Mad Dog Woman, and that is off of Skid Row from 1970.
Mm-hmm. Who did Skid Row the metal band? Give me one song by Skid Row.
I don't know.
I feel like I should know like their one hit.
Yeah, I think they did have a couple, but I don't.
Yeah, it's all,
not my genre.
Yeah, it's all kind of Motley Crue to me.
Yes, indeed. So now we've covered the sort of like hard rock kind of thing, right? Obviously, yeah. There are other influences in Skid Row,
yeah.
Which is one of the reasons they did not become very successful is because their music was just kind of too
interesting.
Too interesting. Yeah. On the other end of the spectrum, you had a band called Horselips, who some people refer to as the Irish Jethro Tull, where they specifically sought to incorporate traditional Irish music with rock music.
I'm thinking the flute is going to appear in here.
So they were, Horselips were the first people to do this. They were hugely successful in Ireland. I don't think they ever got airplay in the U.S., like ever, but they are, they're pretty cool. And we're going to hear a cut from their first album, which came out in 1972. It is called Happy to Meet, Sorry to Part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a very cool die cut album cover thing. And one of the songs sounds like this, Dig It and Dig It Deep. It's on vinyl.
Thank you. dare to flaunt yourself at me. I don't want you, I don't need you, I don't love you. Can't you see I'm Jericho? I'm Jericho. I'm Jericho. I'm Jericho. And when the stars go out, you can hear me shout. Two heads are better than none. 100 heads are so much better than one.
That was Derek Doom
by
Horse Lips. That's off of a 1974 album called The Teen, which is a retelling of some Irish military folklore story thing.
Huh.
They were big on Irish history, so they did a couple of albums that were like
concept
albums around traditional Irish mythology.
Remember the Black Poteen.
Something like that, yes.
This is the first one that has actually sounded like an Irish band. It's got an Irish influence in it. It's got the penny whistle.
Yep.
It's got the fiddle and the bodhran.
Yep. And before that, we heard Hall of Mirrors. That's off of their first album from 72. Happy to Meet, Sorry to Part.
Yeah, it's not a great title, but I like the sound.
Yeah.
So, you know who's over in Ireland right now? Your friend Rich Kelly.
Really?
Yeah.
A guy named Rich Kelly's in Ireland.
What are the chances of that?
Yeah.
He posted, this is a friend, mutual friend of ours, he posted recently that he was going back to the old sod.
So he went there for St. Patrick's Day, and they don't celebrate it there, do they?
I don't know. Is that true?
I think it's an American thing.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they do now for tourism, but traditionally it's not part of Irish culture.
I've always wanted to go for Bloomsday, which is the day that...
Bloom County gets red?
No. Mm-hmm. And related to that is one day of the year you celebrate James Joyce's Ulysses and wander through Dublin, going to all the places that the character Leopold Bloom goes to with a bunch of other drunken Ulysses fans.
So it's a pub crawl.
It's a pub crawl, but it's a literary pub crawl.
Oh.
Like Joyce fanatics.
An Irish literary pub crawl?
Irish literary pub crawl. You know, we have Bloomsday celebrations here in Boston. You can go to one at Boston College if you would like. You'll see people dressed as characters out of Ulysses. You'll hear people reciting passages from Ulysses. There'll be lectures. There'll be...
Are they all drunk?
Yeah, well, sure.
Okay,
I mean,
that's cool.
A given.
Yeah. All right, so outside of the traditional rock sphere, there was other classic rock music taking place in Ireland, some with sort of folky influences, some with other influences.
Mm-hmm.
This next band, these guys are from Dublin.
And apparently they did mushrooms.
This is 1973.
Big mushroom on the cover.
Big mushroom on the cover. And the music sounded like this big mushroom right here.
You this land of misery. Nothing left for me to say. Gonna hide myself away. Find a hole in the ground. No one else for miles around. What am I doing wrong? Should I stay where I belong?
Okay.
Damn.
Yeah, that was The Heir Apparent.
The Heir?
The Heir Apparent, and those guys were from Ireland.
Of course.
That was an album off an album called Sunrise, produced by Jimi Hendrix.
Whoa, the Jimi Hendrix?
The Jimi Hendrix.
I've heard of him.
Who played on that cut.
No way.
Yeah, way.
Is he playing bass or what?
A guitar, I assume. Yeah. Probably some of that stuff. And the other interesting thing about the Heir Apparent, although not on this recording, this man had already left the band. Right. The Heir Apparent were originally called The People.
The People.
They were then signed by Chaz Chandler from The Animals, okay. who was also managing Jimi Hendrix at the time, brought them over to London, changed their name
to,
something Irish try to exploit the sort of Irish angle. And they then went on tour, opening for Jimmy when he toured the U.S. in 1968.
Wow.
At that time, the lead guitarist in The Heir Apparent was a guy by the name of Henry McCulloch.
Henry McCulloch.
Lead guitar player
for
the Grease Band, Joe Cocker.
Whoa.
And Jesus Christ Superstar.
No kidding.
Way.
How about that?
Yeah.
What was their Irish name when they sold them People as an Irish band?
The like People.
The People?
No, it was just The People.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you said they Irished them up somehow.
Well, they changed their name to Heir Apparent.
Oh, I see. That somehow makes it Irish?
E-I-R-E.
Oh, yeah. Heir Apparent.
Yeah.
So clever.
Yeah. But, like, how cool would that have been? You know, the guy who ended up playing, it would have been 2 years later, 1968, you go see Hendrix in the U.S., the Heir Apparent's opening up for them. Henry McCulloch is on lead guitar, who 2 years later will be playing on the Jesus Christ Superstar album.
Yep.
And
you never know.
Hendrix will be dead.
You never know. It's awesome. You never know who you're looking at. I tell this to my writers all the time when I teach writing classes. Just look around the room because you never know who's sitting next to you. I have a friend who went on a date once with Al Franken.
Wow.
And I have another friend who took an acting class, and that guy that she was with, what was his name? David Duchovny? He actually went on and, goddamn, made a career out of it.
Wow.
She didn't, and now she's just a housewife somewhere. But, yeah, David Duchovny, I remember that. Yeah, Al Franken, whatever happened to him?
Yeah.
So, there you go.
I have a radio show. And thank you for everyone who's listening.
Both of you.
All right. So, Borgo Pass, you are leaving us?
Borgo Pass, yes. I just stopped in to say hello on this pre-St. Patrick's Day celebration here on Classic O'Rock Mine.
Awesome.
And now I'm off to the fabled land beyond the rainbow, don't you know, where the pot of gold is awaiting me.
Excellent.
Enjoy the rest of your Irish rockin'.
Thank you very much, sir. I will. And I think, let me send you out with some Irish rocking. This is a band called Froop.
Froop.
F-R-U-U-P-P.
Okay.
1973.
All right.
Sounds like this.